We invite you to a cruise where you will have a shipboard encounter and the possibility that you'll run into a stowaway, too. Could it be the charming stranger is the blackout killer? It's quite an excursion with Olivia de Havilland and Reginald Gordon in Voyage Through Darkness, Suspense, from September 7th, 1944.
Now, Roma Wines present... Suspense! Tonight, Voyage Through Darkness, starring Olivia de Havilland and Reginald Gardner. Suspense is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glass full would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you... Suspense! This is the man in black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you the distinguished American leading lady of the screen, Miss Olivia de Havilland. Miss de Havilland appears as a girl named Judith Webster, who found herself embarked upon a journey into darkness. Traveling with her on this perilous voyage is that suave and debonair actor, Mr. Reginald Gardner. So with the performances of Mr. Havilland and Mr. Gardner in this sea-going adventure play, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
It happened in 1939, shortly before England and Germany were at war. I was in London, serving as traveling companion to Mrs. Edna Prescott, a wealthy, quite elderly American woman. She wasn't a pleasant person, and the city's practiced blackouts were a particular source of annoyance to her. I remember thinking how ironic it was that she should die during one of them. I even thought it the cause, until the doctors assured me her death was due to a common heart ailment. I was very busy for the next few days, arranging passage to America, getting my train ticket down to Southampton, and carrying out the promise I had made so many times to Mrs. Prescott. I didn't relish any part of that.
Miss Webster, oh yes, yes, yes. The young woman who's escorting the casket. Oh, here's your ticket. Gate 5, please. Boat train for Southampton! This way, please!
The young woman who's escorting the casket. He said it so matter-of-factly, as if such things occurred every day. I suppose they do. And yet, every minute on that train, I felt uncomfortable, on edge. It seemed as if the trip to Southampton and the steamer docks would never end. How glad I was when it did, and how cheerful the steward's voice sounded as he greeted me at the head of the gangway.
Good evening, miss. Welcome aboard. May I show you to your cabin?
Please do, steward. I'm very tired.
12A, B deck. This way, miss.
Police, track him down, blackout killer! Police, hot on train, the blackout killer!
I hope they get him all right, miss.
Get who?
Police have new clue on blackout killer.
Boy, that blackout killer. The police have a new clue on him, he says.
Oh, yes. An awful thing.
Ah, here we are, Miss 12A. You have it all to yourself.
Thank you, steward. Oh, I'm sorry. Here you are.
Oh, it's quite all right, miss. Thanks, and good night. Call me if you need me now.
Good night. In my stateroom, perfectly safe, I realized how jittery I'd been, how upset. And now, how relieved. Suddenly, I began to laugh right out loud. My fears had been so foolish, so very foolish. I went out on deck. I no longer felt tired, and I wanted to watch the lights of the coastline fading away from us. I was standing near the aft rail, quietly looking out across the water, when he first spoke.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Oh.
I'm sorry. Did I frighten you?
Oh. Yes. Yes, you did. I didn't realize there was anyone near that lifeboat.
Well, I'm sorry. I was sure you saw me. I never would have...
Well, it's all right, really. I've been nervous tonight anyway. I'm not always so jumpy.
What you need is an ocean voyage.
Maybe that's it.
Were you watching the shore lights?
Yes, and I never did answer your question. They are beautiful.
Very. And the sea alone is beautiful. She has moods, you know, just like a woman. Gentle sometimes and soothing. Then suddenly flying into a rage and dashing things to pieces.
Then quieting right down again.
That's right. I see we feel the same about her.
Does she frighten you sometimes?
The same way women frighten me.
Oh?
I mean, when I don't understand them.
Well, I thought it was the general male consensus that we weren't supposed to be understood.
Only loved. Isn't that the rest of it?
Something like that.
Anyway, it's a philosophy I disagree with.
That's refreshing.
Ah, the lady is amused.
Oh, not at all. It's just that the lady detects a bachelor.
Because I have a mind of my own?
Well, that's one good clue. Well, listen to me. I'm lecturing to you as if I believe that bit of Triton's ends up as if I'd known you all my life.
Well, wait a minute. There's another which makes it perfectly all right. It's that shipboard friendships last forever business. However, my name is Alan Bruce. Yours?
Judith Webster.
Miss or...
Miss.
Good. Well, we got through that.
Quite nicely.
You suppose we could get through a dance? There's music in the salon.
Well, there's no longer any view of the shore lights. However, you did say the sea alone was beautiful.
I was so wrong. There's nothing as monotonous as all that water.
It is kind of flat.
Yes, well, let's trade it for champagne, shall we? Be with you in a minute.
Where are you going?
Well, just over here. Wanted to do the skipper a little favor.
What is it? Oh, the lifeboat cover. How did that ever get so loose?
I don't know. I noticed it a while back. There. Well, that should do it.
Strange. It was almost as if... Oh, no.
Well, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to get melodramatic and suggest that someone might have been hiding there.
You mean a stowaway?
Yes. Well, of course it's silly.
I wouldn't say so.
You're joking.
Not at all. It's quite possible someone could have slipped on board and hid in that boat. That's why I think we shouldn't mention this to anyone.
What?
It would only cause an alarm.
But I don't understand. Do you really think there might have been someone... I shall never forget that moment and the thoughts which went racing through my mind. My nervousness on the train, those horrible headlines about the blackout killer, that newsboy had shouted an hour before, Alan's strange attitude about the lifeboat, the whole unpleasant nature of this voyage, and my promise to Mrs. Prescott. I wanted to turn and run, wanted to cry out, but somehow I couldn't. It was like a dream when you can't move. And then the darkness was swept away and I was no longer dreaming. I was in Alan's arms dancing. There were laughing, carefree people all about us, and the ship's salon was so bright and friendly, I was ashamed for even thinking there might have been anything wrong.
We had enough? They just brought our champagne.
Well, in that case, yes. I'd about given up.
Well, a fine way to talk about my dancing.
You know perfectly well what I mean.
Oh, all right. Let her go, waiter.
Right you are, sir.
There we are. All right. Thank you, waiter. That'll be all.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that does look good.
And is. Well, what should we toast to? Shipboard friendship?
Shipboard friendship.
You know, I...
What is it? Something wrong?
No, nothing at all. Just thought I saw some and I... Will you excuse me a moment?
Well, of course.
I won't be long.
Everything all right, miss? Oh, excuse me, miss, but the gentleman, he dropped this billfold.
Oh, thank you, waiter. I didn't notice. Would you just leave it there on the table?
Very good, miss. There you are.
The billfold fell open as the waiter placed it on the table. I couldn't take my eyes from it. There was an identification card in plain sight. The name on the card was not Alan Bruce. It was Charles Drew.
Sorry to have run off that way. I never should have. Didn't know the fellow at all. Say, you haven't touched your champagne. You'll let all the kick go out of it.
I'm afraid all the kick has gone out of it.
Well, we'll soon take care of that. Oh, my billfold. Where did you find it?
It was on the floor. The waiter picked it up.
The waiter, did he look at it?
No.
Well, we found an honest man, eh? Have to remember him.
Hadn't you better look to see if you found an honest woman?
I'll take a chance.
On my honesty, yes. But what about a woman's curiosity?
Oh, I see. Well, now you know. Well, I must be more careful of my things in future. But you know, I'm sure you wouldn't tell anyone anything.
No?
No. I knew from the very first that I could trust you. Implicitly.
Stop your music. Stop your music. Stop your music. Stop.
What's happened?
What's up,
Stuart? Why is the music stopped? What's the matter?
Attention! Attention, everybody! Everybody! The first officer has something to say to us.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to break in on your dancing this way, but I assure you this won't take long. We've just received a radiogram from London, and I must ask your cooperation.
Nothing important. Maybe it's war with Germany.
No, it isn't war. Nothing nearly as alarming as that. However, the London police suspect that we're carrying a stowaway, and they've asked us to make a thorough search of the ship and report back to them.
Really, must be a criminal.
A criminal? No, I don't
think so. Perhaps it's a blackout killer.
A killer on our ship?
Now, wait a moment, please, ladies and gentlemen. It won't help to get excited. The ship is being searched. He'll never get off. All we ask is that you keep your cabins locked.
I was afraid this might happen.
How long did you expect to keep it from them?
Naturally, I was hoping they'd never... Judith! Well, Judith, what's wrong? Where are you going?
Hey, look at him.
Oh, what the devil?
Hey, what's the matter, Handsome? She ran out on you?
Oh, please, let me through, will you?
Okay, sure. Go do it, mister. Don't let her get away. You know, maybe she thinks that you're the blackout killer.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Olivia de Havilland and Reginald Gardner. You have heard them in the first act of Voyage Through Darkness by Joel Malone. Tonight's tale of suspense.
It is a fact that connoisseurs of many foreign lands have discovered the excellence of Roma wines. The greatness of California's wine country from which Roma comes. But millions of Americans also know these things and have made Roma by far the most popular, the largest selling of all America's wines. Here at home, Roma wines are truly inexpensive. For only pennies a glass, your meals, your entertaining, can have the added delight of superb Roma wines. You will find them constant in quality, of unvarying excellent taste and character. Fine products of age-old winemaking skill, perfected by modern knowledge. To start enjoying this really fine wine yourself, simply place on the table with dinner tomorrow a well-chilled bottle of hearty, ruby-red Roma California Burgundy. Don't worry about what the meal is or what glasses you have handy. You'll be delightfully surprised at how much extra enjoyment you get from your meal. How Roma wine makes even the simplest meal a feast. Enjoy Roma wines anytime with meals when entertaining. It's the easy, inexpensive way to make a big hit with guests and with the family. Be sure to ask your dealer for R-O-M-A, Roma wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our soundstage Miss Olivia de Havilland and Mr. Reginald Gardner as they continue Voyage Through Darkness, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I'll never know why I left the dining salon without telling them. Certainly there could no longer be any doubt. It was all too clear. That loose canvas covering on the lifeboat. The way he'd been standing there. Even the name he had given me. Alan Bruce. I saw it later on the regular passenger list. He must have killed Bruce and thrown him overboard, taking not only his name, but his stateroom and clothes. It was all so fantastic. Worse than anything else. I had almost fallen in love with him. He knew that, I'm certain. It was why he was so confident that I wouldn't tell anyone. And I didn't. Not even when I spoke to the first officer about my promise to Mrs. Prescott. I wanted to tell him, but somehow I couldn't.
Webster, I'll arrange it for early tomorrow morning. Most of the passengers will be asleep.
Thank you. I suppose it's rather unusual, but then Mrs. Prescott was an unusual woman.
I haven't conducted a burial at sea since the last war. However, I'm not entirely unprepared. The company officials spoke to me about this before sailing, and... Well, now, don't you worry, Miss Webster. The ceremony will be quite in order, I assure you.
Thank you.
I'll bid you good day, ma'am.
Wish you hadn't done that. Well, I'm sorry. I seem to have a habit of startling you.
What do you want? How long have you been standing there?
Long enough to overhear that conversation.
You had no right. What are you doing in my cabin?
Please, I know what you're going to say. I had no right to be here or to listen. However, it's fortunate that I did.
What do you mean?
I didn't know that it was Mrs. Prescott's desire to be buried at sea.
No one knew it. But it was her last wish. I promised her would be carried out.
And tomorrow morning you're keeping that promise?
Yes. And now, if you'll excuse me, I don't feel very well. I'd like to...
Wait, please, Judith. You've been avoiding me, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
I hope it's only because you've been upset. About Mrs. Prescott, I mean.
That's one reason.
Oh, I'm sorry. I almost thought we were beginning to become very good friends. You know, you're the only person on board whom I can trust.
You're very sure about that, aren't you?
Of course. You know who I am and what I'm doing on this ship, and yet you've told no one.
I wanted to.
I know. Women were never meant to keep secrets. However, I'm going to ask you to keep one more.
I'd rather not.
Sorry. I must include you this time. You see, it requires a change in your plans so they'll fit in with mine.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
It's very simple. Judith, this may upset you, but I must ask that you tell them that you've changed your mind, that you don't want Mrs. Prescott buried at sea.
What?
You remember what they said. Even if they couldn't find the stowaway, he'd never get off the ship. Well, he could get off very easily if you'd allow him to take Mrs. Prescott's place in that casket.
What, in that casket?
Yes. Clever, eh?
Clever?
Well, not every man would think of it. Simple as it may seem, everyone searching the ship, questioning each passenger, and all the while the man they were seeking would be safe inside the casket. He would only have to wait, patiently, and then be hoisted from the ship's hold, lowered onto the pier, and whisked safely away in a funeral car.
And when he was discovered by the funeral attendants?
I'm sure they'd be so shocked at the dead coming to life, he'd have little trouble in...
Stop it! Stop it, you hear? If you haven't any respect for the dead, I'm afraid I have.
Oh, Mrs. Prescott, you mean. I should have told you that part of it. Her last wish has already been carried out. You see, her body was removed from the casket the night we sailed. Mrs. Prescott is already buried at sea.
Of everything, haven't you?
Yes. In my position, one must.
remained in my cabin all that day and the next. I was afraid to see him again. I can't explain the strange fascination he held over me. I remember how surprised the first officer looked when I told him I had changed my mind about the burial. It was as if he sensed the truth, as if he knew Mrs. Prescott's body wasn't in the casket, that it was empty. But of course, it was only my imagination and my sense of guilt for this terrible wrong I was doing. When we sailed into New York Harbor, I went out on deck. He was standing there near the port rail. I went up to him. He turned and smiled as if he'd been expecting me.
Oh, there you are. I've missed you. Haven't been under the weather?
No, I've been perfectly well.
You had me worried, not showing up at dinner. You know, I've come to depend on you.
Yes, I know.
I've decided not to let you get away from me. After this is all over, we must,
You haven't much time.
Oh, that's right. This may not be easy. Wish me luck.
Haven't I done more than that already?
Yes, of course. Only, I mean, like this, Judy.
He had taken me in his arms. He released me, and I remained there by the rail as he hurried away. I watched as the ship moved on into the harbor under the guidance of the tugboats with their shrill, insistent little whistles. I listened to the shouts of the crew and longshoremen. Soon we were alongside the pier. And the steward was shouting from the head of the gangway, and then I saw it. The casket. They were lowering it toward the pier. There was a car waiting, a long black car, and suddenly I realized what I had done, what a fool I had been, what a cowardly, frightened little fool. Wait! Stop them! Don't let them take it! Don't let them! Wait, please! You mustn't touch that casket. There's something wrong.
Huh? Hey, what's the matter with you, lady? Get out of the way, will you?
But there's a man in there alive. He's hiding.
Sure, sure. Hide and go seek, he's played in a coffin. Go on, lady. We've got work to do. Slam those rear doors tight, Ed.
Please, you must listen to me. If you won't, I'll call the police. Someone has got to stop him. He'll...
Did I hear you call for the police?
Oh, yes, these men won't listen to me, but there's a... A man hiding in this casket.
Of course there is. We put him in there, Judith.
What did you say?
I said we put him in there. Or rather, we let him walk right into our trap.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me there's someone else inside that casket?
Well, surely you're not trying to say that you thought I was in there.
Well, who else?
Who else? Why, the blackout killer, of course.
Then he's getting away. You're letting him get away.
No, Judith. No. Those men know who's inside that casket. And they know right where to take him.
Take him?
You know, Judith, for someone who helped plan this entire thing, you're acting very strangely.
I'm acting strangely?
It's almost as if you didn't know who I am at all.
I don't.
What?
I said I don't know you. I still don't.
But the night I dropped my billfold, I thought surely you...
All I learned that night was your real name, Charles Drew.
You mean you didn't look at the rest of my papers?
Certainly not.
But that's amazing. Say, you are different.
Yes, and I suppose you're the everyday run-of-the-mill type. Look, what is this?
Oh, it's all very simple, Judith. I thought you'd learned of my affiliation with Scotland Yard when you had my billfold.
You mean you're a detective?
I've even been called a bloodhound.
Then all this time, you've been trailing the killer.
That's right. We had a tip-off he might be on this ship, and when I discovered the loose lifeboat covering, I was certain of it.
Then Alan Bruce, He wasn't murdered at all.
He never existed. Just a name I was using. Good Lord, Judith, you know detectives never travel under their own names. It just isn't done.
No. Everything has to be done the hard way. I suppose that's why you just didn't find the killer and arrest him on board.
Oh, no. Hardly. You see, I couldn't find him. Searched the ship from top to bottom. I guess he really would have given me the slip if I hadn't looked in the casket.
He was hiding there all the time.
No, it was empty.
I don't get it.
Neither did I at first. then I began to wonder why he would remove Mrs. Prescott's body from her casket unless it was part of some plan.
And
I decided that it was. A weird yet thoroughly clever plan. Remember I told you not every man would think of it?
Yes, you did say that.
He had only to wait patiently until the ship docked.
Then, at the last minute, slip into the casket.
And be hoisted out of the hold, onto the pier, and whisked safely away in the funeral car.
And think, if it hadn't been for you, he might have gotten away with it.
Oh, you helped plenty by calling off that burial and leaving the way open for him.
Oh, no, Charles. I nearly wrecked everything. I thought you were the killer.
Well, no wonder you avoided me.
I was so mixed up. I thought I knew so much.
No, it's my fault, darling. I overestimated you. Is it all clear to you now?
Well, No, that is, it's clear about how, well, the killer and the casket, but I don't know whether...
What? You mean about the lifeboat and...
No, about you. I'm not clear whether or...
You mean whether or not I'm really Scotland Yard? Well, I am. You can really...
No, I'm just not sure whether...
But Judith, there's nothing else. Oh, except, of course, that I love you and...
What was that again?
I said I love you.
How can I be sure?
Judith, darling.
Oh, Charles. That makes it very clear.
And so closes Voyage Through Darkness, starring Olivia de Havilland and Reginald Gardner. Tonight's study in Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. If you are one who does not yet know how much and how delightfully Roma wines add to your meals, well, let me urge you not to miss out any longer on such a treat as this. There is nothing complicated about it. Just get and serve Roma wine with any meal or any time in any kind of glass you wish. Serve it chilled. Try the many different kinds of Roma wine until you find those you like best of all. Try Roma California Sherry with its wonderful nut-like flavor as an appetizer. Or Ruby Red Roma Burgundy or the deliciously delicate flavored Roma Sauterne. These superb wines cost you only pennies a glassful. Yet they make even the simplest meal taste like $1 million. Get some today. And if your dealer is temporarily out of Roma, please try again soon. Ask for R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, America's largest selling wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Olivia de Havilland starring in Voyage Through Darkness, a vehicle for suspense. From 1944. And of course, the culprit, the would-be culprit, is actually working with the other side, Scotland Yard, in pursuit of the killer. And eventually, in the course of the hour, falls in love. Into space next with X-1 and the Mapmakers. When old-time radio drama continues in a moment, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. He's no math whiz when he's awake, but asleep, well, he's a human computer. In this story from X-1, it's the Mapmakers from September 26, 1956.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X minus one. Tonight's story, The Map Makers, by Frederick Pohl.
Damage report, Mr. Bunner.
Aye, sir. Three bulkheads penetrated in AC and D sections, patched in airtight.
Hmm. How is Lieutenant Groden?
He isn't good. He's unconscious. His head is all bandaged up. There's a million to one chance. I don't think it's happened in 300 years. Meteoric matter hitting a ship in hyperspace.
Mr. Bonner, would you please have the air vents operated to clear the control room of kerosene fumes?
Mr. Lorch.
Aye, sir. Ciccarelli, man the vent.
I'll have a half-G spin, if you please. We can use a little gravity while we figure this out.
Aye, sir. Engine room, half-G spin for simulated gravity.
How about the Atlas?
That's the worst damage, sir. Celestial Atlas is destroyed.
Hmm. The Atlas was the only record on board of the hyperspace configuration. The total loss?
It's dead, sir.
Oh.
Hang on, here comes gravity spin.
What was his name?
The Atlas? Spawn. He had a sister in Seattle, I think.
The pass orders for burial at the afterlock.
I see.
And, Mr. Bonner, have all officers assemble in the wardroom for an emergency meeting as soon as we are secured for normal space.
At ease, gentlemen.
Gentlemen, we are in trouble. We are in the soup, and we're a long way from home. Bonner, would you get me a bulb of coffee, please? Now, nobody is going to come and get us out of this. We'll have to do it ourselves, if we can. Ciccarelli is trying to get us a fix. But I can tell you right now, we are not close to the solar system.
Here you are, sir.
No, thank you. That meteor dropped us out of hyperspace in the middle of a jump. Consequently, there isn't a constellation in the sky that you or I or anybody else ever saw before. We might be 100 light years from home, or we might be 10,000.
Well, sir, what about our records?
They went with the Atlas. We can't retrace our steps, not in hyperspace.
Sir?
Yes, what is it, Lorch?
Burial detail standing by at the afterlock.
Very well, we'll get down there in a few minutes. I'm afraid the Atlas will have to wait.
He's a mess, isn't he?
Cover him up. Haven't you got any respect?
Yeah, it's a laugh. Spawn, I mean. Look at his head. They spent 4 years stuffing it with all those equations under that hypno machine. Did you ever see him working a jump?
Oh, my jump station's engine pit 3.
There's enough to curl your hair. You know what it's like during jump. No lights, no fluorescence even, just those kerosene lamps smoking. Everything looking bent and twisted. You can't tell what you're seeing. Well, Spawn stands right up there next to the captain in a trance. And he's spouting numbers and times and equations. And all the time, his eyes are shut. He's out like a light.
He's sure out for good now.
It's funny. He never knew how to count up his pay when he was conscious. When he's out, he's as good as a 5-story computer.
I never could figure it. It's kind of creepy. Why don't they take a regular machine to do hyperspace navigating?
Well, you ought to know. You just lifted him. Spawn weighed 130, ringing wet. A computer would weigh maybe 3 or 4 tons. Ship couldn't lift it.
We got computers on board.
Yeah, electronic computers. What's the first order before a jump?
Douse all electric gear.
Sure. The Terra 1 blew higher than the kite before they found it out. You don't use juice in hyperspace. Not if you want to get out of it. So you can't use a computer during a jump. That's where Spawn came in.
I can't use him in a jump anymore either.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Hey, listen. That's the brass coming to dump him. I gotta get back to my patient, put out that cigarette, and try to look solemn.
Oh.
Mr. Broderick.
Oh. How is he, Conboy?
Not so good. Oh. I gave him 3 ampules of neomorph in the last 2 hours. That's twice the normal dosage.
Mm. Let me see.
Lieutenant Grodin's the navigator, isn't he? I mean, what happens with him all cut up in the head?
The captain is a trained navigator.
Well, that doesn't do us any good in jump, does it? Not without the Atlas to do the calculating.
Look, our job down here is to keep Lieutenant Grodin out of pain. We'll leave the rest of the bridge, all right?
Well, sorry, sir. It's just that Corelli in the chart room told me he can't locate one of those stars in his chart. And what's more...
Conboy.
Yes, sir.
Hand me that ampule.
Recorders made Eklund, report to the wardroom.
Recorders made Eklund, report to the wardroom.
All right, Eklund, come in.
Recorders made Eklund reporting, sir.
Stand at ease, Eklund. You've heard about Recorders made Spahn?
Yes, sir. I was with Charlie when...
Bonner, get Eklund a chair, please.
Aye, sir. There you are.
I'm all right, sir.
You know that Spahn's operation was essential to navigation in a jump.
No, sir. I mean, I don't know much of anything until I'm indexed.
Yes, of course. You're rated a ship's librarian log.
Yes, sir.
Spahn read his calibrations up to this point into you?
I suppose so, sir. I'm in trance when I record.
Yes, of course. Now we're going to need those records. Are you ready?
Yes, sir. The key word is index.
All right, Eklund. Index.
There she goes. Takes about 30 seconds for full trance.
You know, Bonner, this is risky. Trying to backtrack on hyperspace equations by dead reckoning. A centimeter off of the figures might put us 1,000 kilometers in hyperspace. Anything up to 1,000,000 light years when we dropped back into normal. I wish that meteor had gotten me instead of the Atlas.
She's in trance, sir.
No. All right, Eklund. Ship's log. Journey day one. Jump one.
Journey day one. Jump one. Normal space coordinates. 3456-7465. Sub 456. Time 4356.98.
Ensign Lortz reporting on watch, sir. No maneuvering during watch, no change in operating status. I haven't made an entry for course and position, Mr. Bonner.
Just put down unknown in big letters.
Yes, sir. You didn't get anything out of Eklund?
Oh, sure. We got the absolute magnitudes and the stellar distances of half the stars in the galaxy. And a short course in the geodesics of the n-dimensional space. We didn't get a road map. What does that thermometer read?
It's all right, sir. I adjusted heat level.
What?
The welding torches had the temperature up 5 degrees, so I ordered air valved into the expansion line.
Mr. Lortz, you were bleeding air?
Well, yes, sir, to cool ship.
Lortz, you're a fool.
What?
You valve off air as though we had a whole world of it. Did it ever occur to you we might be in space a long time and we might run out of air?
But, sir, that doesn't happen. I mean...
No, not when you can jump. Not when Earth is an hour or a day away, but we can't jump. You just leave those air valves alone. We'll need every molecule.
Grodin, can you hear me?
Oh.
It's Doc Broderick. Can you hear me?
Yes, I...
All right, don't talk. You've been hurt. A meteorite got the Atlas and something got you right across the eyes. Drops of molten metal. You're blind, at least for now.
Oh.
We can fix you up from the eye bank. Let me get back on Earth.
The Atlas. Atlas. Dead.
Ah, we got enough problems. I've got to take the bandages off now. Can you see anything? We're going to pass the light in front of your eyes. You tell me if you can see anything.
No. No. Nothing but it hurts.
All right, convoy. Hand me that ampule. Secure for jump, Mr. Bonner.
Secure.
Engine room. Damage ab. Damage forward. Generator station. Radiation control. Cargo hold 1, 2, 3, 4. Men's quarters aft.
You ready, Eklund?
Yes, sir.
Women's Have you ever been on the bridge during a jump?
No, sir.
Well, it's tricky. Your eyes lie to you. You see things that aren't there. I don't know how much you will get in trance.
Nothing, sir. I black out completely.
Oh, good.
Ship secured, sir.
Ship secured, sir.
Kill the spin.
Engine room, kill spin. Ship's company, stand by for free fall. Free fall.
Check off.
Chronometers wound and synchronized. Kerosene lamps lit. Navigator.
Aye.
Communicator.
Aye.
Atlas. I'm sorry. Ready, Eklund?
Aye.
Put her under.
Eklund. Index.
Proceed, Mr. Bonner.
Main circuit breakers open.
Main circuit breakers open.
Electricity cut. Eklund's in trance.
Well, we'll give it a try. Now, Bonner, backtrack on our jumps.
Yeah, maybe it'll work out.
Maybe. Stand by to jump.
Stand by to jump.
Stand by to jump.
We'll go when she's straight up. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, jump. You've been in the jump before.
Here's the ampule, sir.
Not the pressure hypo. We can't use current in jump as we're in. Broden, all right. We're in jump, that's all.
My eye! My eye! My eye!
Phew. Deal. What's the use? You can't use the money even if you win.
Trying to do, chicken out?
Corelli says they got a fix after the jump.
What are we worried about? Deal.
They got a fix, all right. 15,000 light years from Sol.
Shuffle, shuffle.
He says that's the way it is in hyperspace. Distances haven't got anything to do with anything unless you can navigate when you're in jump, and we can't.
Hey, when did Lortz make his rounds?
Why?
I'm going to take off my jumper. It's hot.
Yeah, and it's going to get hotter. You can't cool ship by bleeding air. Every time the jets blast, every time the cook fries an egg, the ship gets just a little hotter.
Don't mention it.
Every time the jump generators turn over, every time you light a match, that gets us hotter and hotter. Hey, what are you doing?
Taking off my skibby shirt. Deal.
How is he, Mr. Broderick?
You can tell the captain that Lieutenant Groden remains unimproved.
How is he, really?
He's working up to some real damage. The kind I can't handle. It's in his head. I had to tell him his sight was gone. Unless we can get back to an eye bank within 10 days. You can patch in an eye, but once the nerve is deteriorated, you can't replace it.
Did he take it hard?
Worse? Worse. Didn't say a word. I know that man is in pain. The convoy found his pills hidden under his pillow. He wouldn't take them. He just lay there without a sound until we went into the jump. Then he screamed his head off.
What's wrong with him?
Who knows? By an electroencephaloscope on board,
But I'm lucky they let me have a mini X-ray.
Yeah, what did doctors do before they had those gadgets? Shoot the patients?
No. With luck, I could run an old-fashioned verbal psychoanalysis on him. I might pick something significant out of the sludge. Maybe 5 or 6 months. That's what they did before they had the EES. What time is it?
07:56.
I've got sick call in 20 minutes. Heat exhaustion, dizzy spells, skin rashes. I'm running out of aspirin and salt tablets.
Yeah. Bonner had me with a 10-man detail defluffing the filter traps on the air circulators. It's a lucky thing spaceships aren't painted. They'd have us chipping paint.
Now hear this. Mr. Broderick, report to the bridge. Mr. Broderick, report to the bridge.
How am I supposed to do that? I got 2 call men down with heat prostration.
I'll look after Grodin, Mr. Broderick. Maybe I could give him an alcohol rub.
Thanks, Lord. Oh, by the way, that alcohol.
Yes?
It's denatured.
Here's the problem, Mr. Broderick. We have fuel for just under 40 minutes of rocket blast at standard thrust. That will bring our overall temperature up to 60 degrees centigrade. That's the maximum the human body can stand, right?
Mm-hmm. That's about 140 Fahrenheit. Well, it hits that on Earth in a couple of places and around the Dead Sea, but it isn't sustained heat. It drops considerably after dark.
We'll hope we find ourselves out of this before we hit 60 degrees. If we don't, at least we won't starve or suffocate. All right, gentlemen. Mr. Broderick, you can prepare for increasing heat casualties as we proceed.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Bonner. Secure for jump.
My eyes. My eyes.
Now take it easy, Grover. Convoy! Convoy!
Yes, sir.
Where's the doctor?
He stayed on the bridge for the jump.
Well, what do we do for Grodin? During the jump, I can't even see him.
I don't think he can hurt himself. You better just wait till the jump's over.
My eyes. They lied. They lied to me. They lied. I can see it. The master pattern, I can see it. No. No, not like seeing, like knowing. That's Lorch. And Roderick's on the bridge. And the captain. And Earth. And the sun, I can see them. Unbuckle the straps. I've got to get up to the bridge. The jump is almost over. I'll be blind again. If Lorch sees me, he'll think it's jump hallucinations. They're lost. But I'm not. I can see the whole universe. I can see.
Jump completed. Secure normal space.
Grodin, come back here. What are you doing out in the passage? Convoy!
Sir?
Come on, give me a hand. Now, how did he get out here and jump? He's blind.
Navigation report negative, sir.
Is there a fix?
No, sir. Pirelli thinks he can get a triangulation on an extragalactic nebula. That'll take time.
Well, what's the temperature?
45.
We don't have time. We'll have to keep on. If we don't end up within a light year of Sol, we're cooked. Literally. So at your convenience, we'll take another jump.
Sir, we've got to take a break. The only way to handle the temperature is frequent rest and liquid.
Will 10 minutes be enough?
Well, I suppose so.
Mr. Bonner, have steward sections issue whatever they have, juices, water. There's no point in saving it for any length of time. We have about 24 minutes of rocket time before the hull heats up to 60 degrees.
Is there any reasonable chance?
Mr. Broderick, we have tried dead reckoning from the records. But in hyperspace, we can't follow them accurately, not without Atlas. I'm timing the blasts from my pulse, because you can't trust reading a clock unless you can touch it. When we jump, I might as well be blind.
Yeah, easy. Get him back on the bed. Now, easy, Conway, easy.
Oh, I got his arm.
There. I can't figure how he got out there. I saw him, but I thought it was a jump hallucination.
Easy, Mr. Gordon. Now, just fly back.
No, no, no. I can see. I can see.
Is that possible?
Oh, look at him, Mr. Lorch. His eyes are covered with bandages. He's blind.
Minutes is up, Captain.
All right. Secure for jump.
I had to assign three more men to each generator. The crew couldn't handle the manual clutch and the heat.
Very well. Proceed.
Chronometers wound and synchronized. Kerosene lamps lit. Navigator.
Aye.
Ready, Eklund?
Aye.
Index.
Proceed, Mr. Bonner.
Main circuit breakers open.
Stand by to jump.
Stand by to jump.
Straight up. 4, 3, 2, 1. Jump.
Seconds to full velocity, sir.
You never can get used to it. You can hear, you can touch, but your eyes lie. The photons and electrons of Terry Vision have some crazy mathematics of their own.
I know, sir.
I remember once I saw a row of monkeys sitting on the control console. I wondered what they were before hyperspace twisted them into monkeys.
10 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Now it seems as if I'm seeing Groton up here on the bridge, and I know very well he's down in sick bay asleep.
Captain. Captain.
Who's that? Lorch?
Yes, sir.
You're not on bridge watch.
Captain, he's really here. It's not a hallucination.
What are you talking about?
Groton. He's really here, sir.
Lord, what's the idea of bringing him up here during jump?
I only brought him to the forward lock, sir. Then he brought me.
Broderick, is this some kind of heat exhaustion?
I'm telling you, sir. We went into jump, and I couldn't see anything that made sense. Just twisting shadows and lights, you know. But Groden took my hand and led me right up here along the passage.
Blind.
Not in hyperspace. Not in jump. Then he can see.
Captain.
I have to get him to take me. He must be in intense pain.
Yes, yes, it's painful. All right. But I can see the whole plan, the whole pattern. It makes sense to me now. I can see the star and the ship and the Earth at the same time. The equations on hyperspace. I can see them the way you can see a triangle or a circle. I can see the Earth, and I can tell you how far it is.
Broden. You mean you can pilot us home?
Yes, I can.
All right, Mr. Groden. Take over this ship.
Number 3 pattern. Fire. Velocity, 5, 6, 3, 7, 4, 8. Relative thrust, 7, 8, 6, 7. Counterblast for 2 seconds. Pattern, 6, 5, 7. Blast. Cut. All right. Hit normal space at mark. 5, 4, 3. 2, 1, mark.
Look out, he's going to fall.
Yeah, I've got him.
There. He saw in hyperspace. He navigated by line of sight
in hyperspace.
We'll have to order a stretcher up. He's flying again.
Sun system, 239 degrees, 45 elevation. Magnified by 50 on forward screen.
That's not Sol.
No, but it's a place to land. There's a planet there. It's Earth normal. You can land and cool ship and replenish air.
Mr. Bonner, take her down to atmosphere. Have planetology section start to check it out.
Aye, sir. Ensign Lorch, report down to planetology. Engine room, landing routine.
Why didn't we hit Earth on the chump road? Why?
Just as well, Mr. Broderick. If the planet checks out, it's a whole world for colonization.
Sure, but it'll be 2 weeks before you can replenish ship and catalyze fuel. There won't be any new eyes for Lieutenant Groden then. The op he knows will be gone too far. He'll never have eyes again.
I knew that before I brought you up.
Ready, blast. Skip deceleration in pit 3.
You mean, Groden, you could have brought us back to Earth?
In 2 jumps.
Then why didn't you? I can't allow a man to go blind because of phony heroics.
Do you want to know how many Sol-type systems there are within 5,000 light years? I can tell you. Want to know what the universe looks like in hyperspace? I can tell you that, too. Only I can't describe it. The whole thing is as orderly and chartable as our own space. And I could see it, all of it. And you offer me eyes. Captain, we have a quadrant of hyperspace to chart. I can see during the jumps. Captain, I...
Look out. He's still in pain.
I can see to the end of the galaxy. And beyond.
I know. But in the meantime, Mr. Broderick.
I think.
When we take off again, Lieutenant Groden will be in command during jump. He will handle this ship, and at his direction, we will chart hyperspace. But in the meantime, will you kindly lead him to his quarters?
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Dead Ringer by Lester Del Rey, a fascinating story about a man who learned that there was nothing on Earth which could set him free, least of all the truth. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Mapmakers, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Ed Prentice, Bob Hastings, Tom Collins, Dick Hamilton, Burford Hamden, Raleigh Bester, and Carl Frank. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
A ship charting hyperspace ran into a problem with its computer, you might say, and the map makers. That was X-1 from September 26, 1956. Our last excursion for old-time radio drama for this Saturday night. I'm Norman Gilliland. I hope you can join me, same time, same station, tomorrow night for more here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.